It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
Good afternoon.
You're polite and you are rarely late.
Thank you.
Would you not agree?
Yeah, and I would have been on time if I hadn't been interrupted. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm just busting his chops. That's my job. I have all these titles on my business card, and the other one is Kobe Slagle Chop Buster. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoce. That's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. Also on the Facebook and on the Twitter, at Matthew Soce. I say that because a certain politician just announced that his favorite band was Rage Against the Machine, and I can picture him saying, "The Rage Against the Machine." Yeah.
He probably goes to the Kroger and the Myers.
Probably also pro-life and pro-death penalty. But let's move on, shall we? We also have the show is available on iTunes. It's you can also listen to our blogs.
The iTunes. You don't listen to the blogs.
You experience the
yes,
blog.
Yes, you experience the blog at filmsociology.tumblr.com. A lot going on at filmsociology.tumblr.com.
It's coming, yes. The man whose voice you're hearing is the man whose chops I bust. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
And you also have your summer interns.
Yes.
We think it's starting to wind down a little bit.
Yeah, it's almost time to go back to camp, go back to practice. But intern Tyler Bobblehead has had a pretty good time here this summer. I think he's got a lot of valuable real-world experience that I think he could apply. It definitely in the off-season. If not, you know, if he wants to pick up sort of a side job during the season.
He can help out?
Yeah, definitely. Anytime he's in town, absolutely. I'd hire him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Letter of recommendation from Kobe.
Yes, letter of recommendation for Tyler Bobblehead.
For you, it's a Tyler Hansborough Bobblehead doll.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I have the whole set.
Really?
Oh.
Roy.
You get the rare Jeff Foster one? They retired in mid-season.
You can't pick that one up because it hurts its back. Joining us for this nonsensical hour of whimsy, actor, director, writer, and fringe man, Ben Ayers. Hi, Ben.
How are you, Matthew?
All right. How's it going?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you coming in. He has a show tonight. The opening night performance of Creatures of the Night. It is not about the Lame Kiss album of the same title, but it's a show that you've written, and it's going to be a part of Indie Fringe, which opens today. The festival starts today, I believe.
That's right. So our show is at 7:30 tonight, Theater on the Square, Stage 2.
And you decided to cleanse your mental palate by hanging out with us. We appreciate that.
It's the least I could do.
We are Radio Sherbert.
Saving that. Yep.
I'd prefer to be gelato, and only if Giada brings it.
Wow.
So
you can't have it all, Matt.
No, I can't. Who says I can't?
Oh, well, yeah. You did get Padma Lakshmi.
I did talk to Padma. And, oh, speaking of cool people I talk to.
We lead the league in show IDs.
We do lead the league in show IDs and cool people I talk to. And dead people we like,
yes.
which we'll talk about a little later on. But we're going to hear a return guest, Food Network chef and personality extraordinaire, Robert Irvine.
Some might call him regular contributor,
Irvine. Yes, he is the Food Network correspondent of Film Sociology. And a surprise cameo by his lovely wife, female wrestler Gail Kim.
We are just expanding. We have our news department.
We're expandables. See, who would be in the Expandables with me? Who are the other fat guys with hot wives on TV? Mark Addy, old George Lopez, Jim Belushi. Who the other? Oh, Kevin James, of course.
Kevin James, yep.
Yep, so, yeah, we'd be the Expandables. We're going to talk about that film in a little bit. So, yeah, but anyway, we talked with Robert and Kim about Wedding Impossible is tomorrow night on Food Network, and the 50-episode retrospect of Restaurant Impossible is next week. Okay, opening in theaters. Oh, can we double-check the if the IMA is still doing stuff? It is warm out.
I don't think they are, but I will check.
If you would, please. Also, opening today, the horror film The Awakening with Rebecca Hall and Dominic West and Imelda Staunton. Love Imelda Staunton. Doesn't get enough credit. You have the animated film Paranorman. There's that. And is that the only thing opening? The Odd Life of Timothy Green. Yes, it's now come to a point. Jennifer Garner is now playing moms in cinema. So you're not aging. I am. So
where the boy comes out of the garden.
Yes, the green kid.
I see.
The green kid. But and Sparkle, the remake of the 70s film, which is now being hailed as, well, it is not hailed, it actually is, Whitney Houston's final film performance. And apparently you can't say bad things about it.
It's the Citizen Kane of Whitney Houston movies.
Ooh. Bodyguard, Waiting to Exhale, Preacher's Wife, Sparkle. I think that's it. It's sad that I know that, but I host a film show.
Yes, there you are.
So I would, but no, we're going to talk about The Expendables 2. It's a very manly show.
It is.
So yeah,
we are men.
We are men, but we're not a bad CBS sitcom that's been running for 100 years.
Nope.
But yeah, they're all back. Sly and his Botoxed eyebrows are back, along with the rest of the. As The Onion called the first Expendables the best action film of 1985. I can't argue with that. And of course, with a sequel, you have to just bring more people in because that's what you do. So while you play the audio, Kobe, of course, someday if you get to listen to the show in studio, Kobe will break down the trailer for you.
Yeah.
But here's the trailer.
They're loaded.
Somebody's hooked.
And I pronounce you man of knife.
You and your little psychotic gang of mutts. Today is payback. 6 months of pure plutonium is powerful enough to change the balance of the world. Imagine what 5 tons would do.
You're gonna need more men if you expect to get out of here alive.
I'm back. You can't let the contents of that safe fall into the wrong hands.
What's the plan?
Track them, find them, kill them.
Here we go!
How did you do that?
Lucky me.
Get in!
His shoe is bigger than this car.
Shoot something!
You're doing what I think you're doing. Yeah,
yeah.
You're gonna need a new plane.
There you are.
Laughter during action.
Yep.
Well, so yeah, let's review people who are, and I will say this for all of them, especially Stallone, is hey, at least they get to work on a film that doesn't go straight to DVD. So bully for these guys, but
well, if Stallone doesn't have a chance to say you're a disease and I'm the cure, then I don't think I'm interested.
I don't think they're bringing back Cobra. No, I really
it's a
don't.
Shame.
You ahead of its time, maybe?
Could be.
Possibly. Cobra was from 1986, Cobe. Don't.
That was before me.
We know.
Yep.
Shut up. So, Stallone, Statham, who's still making films on his own, so there is that. Jet Li, who, by the way, is only in like the first 10 minutes and disappears. They don't reveal that. Apparently not enough money for him. Terry Crews, the fighting guy, Coulter, Terry Coulter. No, I forget who it is.
Van Damme?
No, he's in it. Of course, he's in it. Liam Hemsworth, who the future Mr. Miley Cyrus, is in this as well. Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yeah, Willis and Schwarzenegger have more to do in this one. And Chuck Norris, who appears, two of his entrances appear with the music from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Yeah, see what they were, I think what they're trying to do there is, Chuck is cheaper and was available, so... Apparently somebody else didn't want to come out to play because he's got more important films to work on with Amy Adams. Also, Nan Yu, who we have a female in the show, so it's a good thing. It would be like Mackenzie Roth hanging out here at the station. All attention goes toward her. But it's an actress named Nan Yu who's done a lot of Asian action films and apparently was in Speed Racer, but that requires me thinking about Speed Racer again, so I don't want to. This time around, Sly co-wrote the screenplay, but he did not direct. I'm sure he passed it on to Simon West, who's given us such things as Con Air, General's Daughter, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and the remakes of The Mechanic and When a Stranger Calls. Thanks for that. I remember recommending The Expendables because it was so lunkheaded fun. And what made this, and this was the start of the wave of the over, just blatantly over the top action films, but everybody knew it. Machete, Kick-Ass, Red, and this film. And part of it was everybody involved knows what they were making. They weren't trying to make, they weren't trying to reinvent the action wheel. They were not trying to make serious art like I think a lot of these guys thought they were doing in the 80s and 90s. And they still do that in this, and they're still, all the stuff that we wanted in the first film. There's Terry Crews has the gun that splits people in two, video game style. There's a lot of fighting, a lot of knifing, a lot of shooting, a lot of extreme, because you love that, Cobe.
Yep.
And everybody gets a moment. Everybody gets a bit. But what I'm starting to notice with this one, and in this, Van Damme is the villain, and they go to Albania, and they have to find him, and they have to avenge a death of, I don't think I'm really spoiling anything, but Liam Hemsworth doesn't last very long. He should be wearing a red uniform when it comes to being that member of the Expendables. Not since, Dylan McDermott in The Line of Fire, where he's like, oh, yeah, you're not going to last.
Dead.
Yeah, you're going to. So you can go. Oh, by the way, Liam Hemsworth for you, Cobe. He was Gale in Hunger Games.
I was thinking of Chris Hemsworth.
No, it's Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah. I saw Hemsworth. I was like, no way, is that?
Yeah,
but no, it's not.
So anyway, you've seen his.
I like the names here, the character names: Lee Christmas.
Yeah.
And Hail Caesar, and of course, Toll Road.
Yeah. It's clever. Mm-hmm. But there are moments where, especially the last third, where it becomes a token comedic line festival between guess what Arnold says and guess what Bruce says and guess what Sly says. So the catchphrase montage happens near the end. I got a feeling they'll make a third. And if they got a third, I'm sure they'll throw enough money at Seagal. And Burt Reynolds really needs the work, so please bring him involved into this fold. But I'm worried that if they make another one of these, that it's going to become the thing that they were already being blasted for in the late 80s and early 90s. So
is Richard Roundtree still around?
He is still around. So is Jim Brown. So is Fred Williamson.
Yeah. See, can we get a little bit of soul in these movies?
Well, they did do. They did do original. Fred did. Hey. There is, besides Terry Crews and Jet Li, really, Soul Brother number one.
Yeah,
but there was original Gangstas back in 1996. Jim Brown, mm-hmm. Fred Williamson, Richard Roundtree, Ron O'Neill, Pam Grier, directed by Larry Cohen.
Awesome.
Excellent film. Loved it. I always remembered that film because it opened the same weekend as Twister. And it got 10th place in the box office and still made money and still a far, far better film than Twister. So
well, says you.
Says me. Says most people not named Paxton or Hunt or DeBont, the director. So anyway, it's there. It's a brainless action film. So if you want to see things blow up and you don't want to go see Sparkle, you can go check that out. Do we have the Wasn't That Great? Do you have that?
Yeah, I was looking. We got so many response here. It's hard to sift through. Yeah.
Like, well, why don't you just light one up, Cobe, and see what happens.
It was unbelievable.
No, that's not true. Try another.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
There we are.
Yeah, that's more appropriate. You want to hit another one. I know you do.
Yeah, I really do.
Because okay. we HD2 doesn't sound like a morning zoo more than it already does.
Here we go.
I love it when a movie grabs me frequently and...
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. No, this film did not grab me. So because of the sequel to The Expendables, I had to revisit a couple of articles. There were actually two articles. One that was written by Esquire magazine, and the other by a writer named Paul Young. And gentlemen, help me out on this one. And this will tie into our guest, Robert and Gail, who will be playing my conversation with them shortly. But somebody wrote the article. If the Expendables were women, so here's here's Paul Young's list, and see if you're with me on this, okay? And they actually do say so and so plays the Sly part, or so Sigourney Weaver is as Sly. So the question is, are we 1986 Sigourney Weaver or today? I don't know. So
or shaved head Sigourney Weaver.
Ooh, Alien 3, directed by David Fincher.
Ooh.
Yeah. Even David didn't like that one. Mila Jovovich as Jason Statham. That means if she's in it, then that means Paul Anderson, not the good Paul Anderson, the bad Paul Anderson, will demand to direct it.
So she'll be the bridge between generations.
There you go.
Okay.
Michelle Yeoh as Jet Li. I love Michelle Yeoh. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Tomorrow Never Dies. Cynthia Rothrock is Dolph Lundgren. Do you know Cynthia Rothrock?
No, Cobe? I'm looking.
Yeah, are you? Oh, this is the part of the show where Kobe what? Googles old chicks. Or as Sammy Terry calls them,
vintage chicks.
Cynthia Rothrock was a female martial arts star in the 80s and did films. She did one with Fred Williamson that I own because that's what I do. And she worked with Robert Klaus, who directed Enter the Dragon. I can't remember if she did anything with Norris. I don't think so. But, yeah, there's that. Vivica A. Fox is Terry Crews. I think because of Kill Bill. I have a better choice, but she's a little further down on the list.
Who was the woman in Black Belt Jones and Live and Let Die?
Gloria Hendry. Good call.
She's the better age, right?
Well, we're getting to that.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. That's fine. I have my list here. Lucy Lawless is Mickey Rourke. She has a better face. Yeah. Not nearly as haggard as Mr. Rourke. Michelle Rodriguez is Randy Couture. Haven't they both have arrest records? So that would actually fit. And Angelina Jolie is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I forgot he was in the first one.
Yeah, because he's the villain's henchman. He's Eric Roberts' henchman. Linda Hamilton is Bruce Willis.
I like it.
Yeah. This seems a no-brainer. Brigitte Nielsen is Arnold. Hopefully Brigitte Nielsen back in the 80s, not today, because she could be in The Expendables now.
Here's the problem. I think she actually is Dolph Lundgren. So...
No, because actually Dolph Lundgren's kind of funny in these two Expendable films. I don't see funny as...
You make a good point.
That's right. And as Eric Roberts is the villain, who I think should be another character, Pam Grier.
Yep.
I think she's still feisty enough that she could...
Feisty enough?
Some beat some tail on her own. So that's Paul Young's list. Esquire's list is... There's a few similar, but here she goes. Esquire writes, Linda Hamilton is Sly. And I'm wondering because... Prior to, up until Sigourney Weaver became action heroine in 1986, and then we didn't really have one of major note until Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, which was 91, because I reviewed it in college. And I think if she had her way, she would pick up Susie Amos by the ankles and bludgeon James Cameron to death. And while that was happening, Catherine Bigelow would film it. Kate Beckinsale is Statham.
Okay.
That actually sounds pretty good. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I'm going to mispronounce this, and I'm sorry. Zhang Ziyi as Jet Li. She was the younger girl in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. Pam Anderson as Dolph Lundgren. Also could have been Dolph Lundgren. Also had work. Pam Grier as Terry Crews. We talked about that. Grace Jones as Mickey Rourke.
There we go.
She could also be in The Expendables right now. Gina Carano as Culture. She was an American Gladiator, I believe. Not sure. For your time, Cobe.
Yeah.
Who are you looking at?
Pam Grier's line of work.
Is it Google Image or are you on IMDb?
No, I'm on IMDb.
Are you okay?
I'm checking out Original Gangsters right now.
Are we
Gangstas. Gangstas.
Yeah, Fred Williamson's
gangsters.
Allowed to use that with an A. I cannot. Maria Kanellis. She was a WWE wrestler, a Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then finally, Demi Moore is Bruce Willis. And Brigitte Nielsen is Arnold. So there you go. Gail Kim wants to be an expendable, as we're going to find out
a
little
bit.
Yeah, she definitely could do that. Are we missing anybody in
Original Gangsters takes place in Gary, Indiana.
Yes, I interviewed Fred Williamson in downtown Gary, Indiana. On the set.
On site.
I got to spend the night in Gary, Indiana.
Home of Scatman Crothers, as a matter of fact.
Oh, nice.
Wow. And the Kinsey family. Big Daddy Kinsey, blues singer extraordinaire, and his three sons, Don, Kenny, and Ralph, had a band, yes, called the Kinsey Report.
Uh-huh.
So very, very strong. Yeah, that was fun. I did that for Film Threat. If you look online at filmthreat.com, I don't think it's in their archives, but yeah, Original Gangsta shot. Should I add that to the list, Cobe?
Yeah.
Kobe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know you're smitten by Ms. Grier. So, all right, let's take a break. And you know what? We'll do the interview with Robert Irvine and Gail Kim. And then when we come back, we'll talk about, because there's not a whole lot on DVD. Apparently, there's one movie that's a big deal that's coming out.
Yes, there is.
And then,
and it's weird that it's out tomorrow.
It doesn't want to be. It doesn't. You know what? It doesn't belong with all the other regular Tuesday peon releases.
It really doesn't.
And then we'll talk with Ben Ayers about Fringe and other things. Especially other things. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Yeah, but we couldn't hear you the first time you said it because the music was too damn loud. Okay? Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point. You're an idiot. Here at WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Hanging out with Ben Ayers and Kobe Slager. We do have a correction. We don't want to misinform you of our Hoosier cinema heritage.
Scatman Crothers is in fact from Terre Haute, so yes. I picked the wrong smelly Indiana town.
Oh
no! Well, all right. Duly noted. We're going to talk with Ben Ayers in a bit. But first, we're going to have a chat with Robert Irvine and Gail Kim, who you're going to see tomorrow night on Food Network as a part of a very special show called Wedding Impossible. And then next week is the 50th episode of Restaurant Impossible. It'll be a retrospect, and you might see Emma and me at the Snooty Fox. You never know. But I'm glad you came up with a good idea. We should make him the Food Network correspondent for film sociology, whether he knows it or not. Anyway, here's my chat with Robert Irvine and Gail Kim. Joining me on Film Sociology is a man, well, you're going to see more of him, not that way, than you will ever before with Wedding Impossible, among other things. And he does stuff that doesn't have impossible in the title, but I'm glad he's here with us. Robert Irvine is here. How are you, sir?
Hey, Matt, I'm good. Yourself?
Hanging in there. How was your summer?
Been crazy. We've been literally running around doing, obviously, Restaurant Impossible one a week, getting married in between, shooting a Wedding Impossible, doing Top Chef Canada, Top Chef here, Iron Chef there. It's been kind of a hectic summer, that's for sure.
You hopefully have frequent flyer miles.
So lots of them, but we donate them to charities too. So.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, we do all the right things. Well, I think we do.
Did you get a chance to see any of the Olympics?
I literally did the opening ceremony with NBC, mm-hmm. and then that's about all except the closing ceremony. I watched that with Gail, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think the English did a great job of the opening ceremony and the closing, and did us proud during the Olympics. And, you know, what always amazes me, Matt, is you get all these countries, all these athletes together in one area. Everybody smiles and works together, and yet we can't get countries to do that. Isn't that strange?
Well, I guess that's why we only do it one every 4 years, to remind ourselves that about the human aspect.
It's all good. It's all good.
Well, I know
USA did well. England did well.
Well, I looked at of course, this week was also the special Behind the Impossible, because you're now at 50 restaurants that you've helped out?
We have done 50 restaurants, 46 of them which are doing gangbusters. And this week, the 22nd of August at 9 p.m., and it's funny because from that week, from the 22nd all the way through now, Restaurant Impossible has a new time at 9 p.m. Eastern. So hopefully that will help the younger viewers watch a little bit before they go to bed. It's really cool because you get a chance to see behind the scenes of not only the show that's such a hit for Food Network, but you see the people, Tom, Tanya, myself, the directors, the producers. You'll see people, the restaurants that have actually managed to succeed and those that have failed. So it's a real good insight into behind the scenes. And the fun part is you get to hear about what people think about working with me. I know I haven't seen the show yet.
So this might be the roast.
It could be the roast of Robert Irvine, yes. But I'm used to that, so it's okay.
Well, I say the impact of this show, did you think you'd be helping out 50 restaurants? How long did you think the series would go?
Well, you know, the original series was all about fixing restaurants, putting menus in and moving on. But the show has become such a hit with families because they can all resonate with the struggles of families, business owners in this economic time. So I'm hoping that it goes for another 50 shows, which I think it will. And we'll just wait and see. But I can tell you this, that we have really changed people's lives. And that to me is really important.
And say, I know a certain somebody in my household, whenever we go to a restaurant, she's doing everything from inspecting the lampshades, the lights, the seats. And if she sees dust or something like that, she's not afraid to point it out.
Yes, and nor should she be. At the end of the day, you know, when we go into these restaurants, we're looking for a clean environment, good food, good service, and everybody should feel comfortable in their environments. And basically what we've seen over the last 40, 50 episodes is they're not all they should be, and that's what we do. We fix them. We make sure they're done the right way, and that's it.
And there's been, since the beginning of this show, there's been a number of other programs in and out of Food Network that have Impossible in the title, and there are other shows involving Restaurant Aid. You should be getting a cut for all of these.
Well, you know what? They're not Robert Irvine.
That's true.
So at the end of the day, for me, if they can do what I do and change people's lives, I don't mind. You know, what they say, plagiarism is the highest form of
profit.
Flattery. So, or profit, whichever the case may be. You know, I don't think fixing a hotel and putting Impossible on it is that difficult. I don't think, you know, opening a restaurant is that difficult. But, hey, if it works and the franchise works for them people, great. But at the end of the day, I know what we do, and my record is 92% success rate. So I think we're doing great in that form, you know.
Indeed.
And these are 46 restaurants that will be closed if we didn't do this show. And families will be broken up and divorces and everything else. So I'm very proud of the team that I have and that we work with to put Restaurant Impossible on the air. Okay. And you know, because you've been to one, you know how real it is.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen it. So, you know, and I think that resonates with people. There's no story. It's just real people with problems and we fix them.
And you know Indiana wants you back in one way, shape, or form, whether it's helping out a restaurant or performing or cooking on stage as well.
Yeah, it's fun.
Now, this week also marked the 100th birthday of Julia Child. What kind of impact did she have on you as a chef and as a television personality?
Well, obviously, you know, I think Julia Child was such an immense, you know, she was TV chef without the TV really happening, if you think about it. She brought food to a completely different level and accessible to everybody that wished to try it, and it was okay to make a mistake. And I think she was the turn of, you know, it's okay to mess up food, it's okay to try something different as opposed to eating the same food day in and day out. She had such a vivacious personality. You know, when she laughed, you laughed with her. When she drank a glass of wine, you wanted a glass of wine. And I think she made it easy. And, you know, I know I never got the chance to work with her, but obviously from a chef standpoint, she opened up a lot of doors that we in the future could walk through.
Mm-hmm.
A huge impact on the food scene.
Now speaking of old school food television, you never tried to jump over a chair with a glass of wine, did you, in your younger days?
No, I wouldn't try it then or now. I would be afraid to spill the wine.
Well, it must show the balance of one Graham Kerr, so we'll move on.
Graham Kerr was the galloping gourmet. I grew up with him, and
correct.
You know, he's still around, I believe, somewhere.
Yep. Yes, he is. So whose idea was it for Wedding Impossible? Did the network come to you or vice versa?
Yeah, the network came to me and asked, would we do Wedding Impossible? It wasn't called Wedding Impossible at that time. That's just the name they give to it.
Sure.
But obviously, people want to see, you know, we're a nation of voyeurs. We want to see what the Joneses are doing. And I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe this would be a good idea to show, instead of that intimidating, intense guy, you see the softer side. And you see that a little bit in Restaurant Impossible, because I really do care about the people that I work with. The families are asking me for help. But this is me planning my wedding with Gail, which I wanted it to be a fairy tale wedding, more so than Gail did. Because Gail just wanted to get married. I wanted to do it in the style that she would never forget, and we could all have fun. And I think that the show captures that. It's real moments of our life. And, you know, we've all seen that, these reality shows where they inject drama. You know, they're on TV, they're on different networks, you can see them, and you can see how fake they are. This is just two people madly in love, getting married, and the steps to get married in that vein. And I can tell you, it was an amazing night, amazing day, and everybody had a lot of fun, and you get to see it on TV now on Saturday.
Yeah, say, because most times you don't want to see other people's wedding videos and slide presentations. I think this is an exception to the case.
I think this is a very unusual, very different. You know, I'm always the planner. I'm the one that likes to surprise people. And in this show, I got to tell you, I'm the one that got slam dunk surprised. beyond belief.
Now,
and when you see it, you'll know what I mean.
Now, how much input did you have with the food, and then how much did Gail did as far as arrangements for those things?
I did everything.
Okay.
Gail had to do, well, I rephrase that. Most of the wedding stuff I did, the rehearsal dinner, Gail took care of, and that's where she surprised me beyond my wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting combination because, you know, I'm this guy that likes to be in control of everything. Even up until the seconds before we got married, I was doing what I do, you know, making sure things are done the way I want them. I would not relinquish control of that. And yet Gail had a few surprises up her sleeve beyond. And they were, I was shocked. Let's put it that way. When you see that, you'll see what I mean by I was shocked. It was fun.
So surprise parties don't happen to you all the time?
No, unfortunately, surprise parties don't happen to me all the time. I'm on the road trying to do God's work through my hands with saving people's lives and relationships. And it's a task that I love. You know, when you talk about enjoying your job, I don't think anybody has except you, of course, because, you know, you love what you do also. But I have the responsibility and the power to change people's lives in 2 days for the better. Mm-hmm. And I relish that and I love doing that. It's not work to me. It's something that I really enjoy.
With the title Wedding Impossible, were there challenges? Were there things that were, I mean, you know, I remember you getting a note from the First Lady about
challenges. Yeah, I mean, challenges. Gosh, I'm on the road 330 days a year. Gail, you know, on the opposite side of the coast to me, trying to plan a wedding in between our schedules. Impossible? That's impossible. Trust me.
Well, I think we all know how it turns out for the most part, but it'll be fun to watch the journey. What's the time span? Is this 2 days, like, or?
No, it actually takes me, for the most part, a week to do the whole wedding. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely an intense, you'll see me through shoots and how Gail and I communicate and via tango and things like that. Because she's in, where were you when you were tangoing me, that foreign country? Oh, Guyana. She's in Guyana the week before, and I'm trying to talk to her. It was just one of them, you know, hey, days in the lives of Gail, Kim Irvine, and Robert Irvine.
So I gotta get in the studio and do the DVD commentary with the two of you. That'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That will be fun.
Now, despite having a busy summer, I know you went to the multiplexes a couple of times. What was your summer movie viewing like?
We did Dark Knight, which absolutely loved. Yeah,
yep.
Dark Knight Rises, which totally loved. And then yesterday, funnily enough, we went to watch Spider-Man.
Ah.
And Gail and I, and you know, when we get our time off, to us, there's things we do, and that's eat, we work out, and we watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed Spider-Man last night, a different take on the similar story, but a different cast of characters. Totally loved Martin Sheen. I think he's an amazing actor. Just love the movies. You liked Emma Stone. Gail said she liked Emma Stone. So
that's good. Now, did you get Gail a Catwoman motorcycle?
Did I get Gail? She could actually get away. Gail could be Catwoman. She could, because Matt just said, "Did I get you Catwoman motorcycle?" I think she could be the next Catwoman easily. She's bad enough. She's sexy enough, and she knows all the right moves. I would have to be Batman then.
Yeah, you know, I think this is me saying this. This might be too much information, so I'm gonna shift gears a little bit. This is sort of a family show. Wow.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, she's the ultimate superhero.
Yes, yes.
She can fight. She can sword fight. She can, you know, she can do all that stuff. And, you know, Gail actually did a movie called Royal Kill, was it? Royal Kill. Where she did all the stunts and did all the, it was called Ninja's Creed now, but you should look it up because she doesn't like it. I loved it to watch her in action where she's doing all the fight scenes. There's a movie career in there somewhere for her.
Is she right there?
She's sitting right by the side of me.
Put her on. I want to ask her a question. It's a film show.
Matt wants to say.
Hi, Matt. Sorry. I guess we had a little hiccup there.
It's all right. Gail, how are you?
Good. I'm glad. I'm great.
Yes, you're glad and great. You're glad and great.
Yes, I am.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I say, when I was growing up, my dad was a ringside physician for wrestling back in Flint, Michigan. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So he's probably sick of watching all the wrestling at the end of all that because he's probably watched a lot of matches.
And occasionally, I think he'd rather put in our chest your blood pressure over Haystacks Calhoun any day of the week.
Most likely, yes.
So tell me about Ninja's Creed. Tell me about this big film.
No, it was an independent movie I did. Oh, wow. Now it's probably been at least 6 years because I did it when I was with my first run with TNA. And I got this opportunity. I worked with one of the writers and previously in wrestling. And then he, I guess, worked with the director. And they needed a person to play this assassin. So he thought of me because he knew that I could fight, you know, and so it was a great opportunity. I loved doing an independent movie because it was kind of a close-knit cast, and everybody was super nice, and everybody was working just really hard, and it was just really fun. I got to work with swords. I got to do some fighting, and I think it was great because the lead actor was kind of a good sport because he had done Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So, you know, with wrestling, we kind of really hit each other, but in movies, they don't. So sometimes I would land a punch here and there, and he was such a good sport about it. He's like, no, I want it to look great, you know, so it was fun.
Well, that's showbiz. There was an article about a couple years ago on what would happen if the Expendables were played by women. You ought to check in on that.
Oh, my gosh. That would be the ultimate role there. Anything kick-ass, I love. You know, badass, kick-ass, that's just fun for me. I'm sorry. Robert just reminded me that it's a kid's show.
You're fine, dear. Don't listen.
Yeah.
Anything on
that level, you know, because that's what I do for a living. I'm, you know, sports entertainment, wrestling. I just love being physical. I love entertaining my fans. So, you know, that's what I love to do.
Now, does he let you pick movies? How do you guys pick movie night when you're at home or at the theaters?
He's going to hate me for saying this right now, but we have very similar tastes in movies.
Mm-hmm.
So he does like chick flicks, so I have no problems fighting with him or anything in terms of getting him to watch those girly movies because he's got a sensitive side, which everyone will see this Saturday on Wedding Impossible. So we generally tend to, you know, go for the same movies, which are romance comedies, and then, of course, all the, you know, big blockbuster hits that come to the theaters like Batman and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And we both do not like horror films, so, you know, that's part of the reason I married him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. Robert has my number. You can call me anytime. Don't let him, don't let him think it's like the movie Newlywed Game. You're doing great.
Okay, I will.
All right,
here he is.
All right, thanks.
Hey, she's a sweetheart.
So,
I don't want to mess with her.
No, it's, I always say it's a female world and you're just the dad and the husband
in
some
cases.
Hey,
let me tell you this. I can't even open a combination lock. I just got her trying to open it. She's the smart one of the two of us, as well as a good looking one.
Yep, I'm the third smartest person in my house. You're doing well.
Yeah, I learn a lesson. It's called happy wife, happy life.
Kids too.
So yeah, that's a good part.
Well, Robert, it's really great. What else does the rest of the year look like for you?
You know, we've got this new Robert Irvine Live that travels around the country.
Yeah.
We're in Galveston this weekend, which I'm very happy about. We've got a live show, 2-hour show. If you look on ShepIrvine.com, all the stops are in there. And then, obviously, we live tweet from Robert Irvine 1 every week. We've got new, I'll send you some Bama, new Restaurant Impossible crew shirts, which you cannot buy. You can only win them online when we tweet through the shows. So I'll send you a couple of them for you and Emma.
Oh, thank you.
So that's really cool. And then just doing more and more shows. The show is doing really well. And I said, you know, 46 out of 50 restaurants saved. And just enjoying life. Trying to get a little bit more time with my new wife. Just enjoying life.
When is she going to come and help out with a restaurant? She could kick in some walls.
She's with me all the time. She doesn't go on camera a lot, but we just shot a show together, which a special for Food Network, which you'll see soon, as husband and wife, which is very cool, a little food competition.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to do a lot more together as a couple and TV, and we'll see what happens there. But just married life is a wonderful place to be, and, you know, I've got beautiful kids, and they adore Gail, which is awesome.
Oh, I told Gail, if she uses your sledgehammer on screen, I'm trying to get into a female version of the Expendables. I think she could be on it if she plays her cards right.
Oh, easy. Oh, my word, yeah. She's my hero. I mean, what she does and how she really doesn't realize how good she is. And, you know, she always puts herself sort of down. And I'm telling you, she could do anything that she puts her mind to. She's awesome at everything she does. Very dedicated, very professional, very, driven.
Well, Robert, Gail, thank you so much for your time, and we'll be seeing you on the telly very soon.
Bye.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to go not watch horror movies at the Irvines.
You got something in common with them.
Yep.
So there you go, Robert Irvine and Gail Kim, or Gail Kim Irvine. You can see them tomorrow night on Food Network with Wedding Impossible, and then the Robert Irvine Restaurant Impossible retrospect, I believe, is next Wednesday, as he said, on Food Network. And I'm just going to be waiting by the phone for Gail to call.
You can call anytime. He's got my number.
I want to know. I of course, didn't want to. When the first few times I interviewed Robert, I didn't want to go, hey, is Gail around? Can I talk to her? Yeah. You sound a little creepy that way. You have to develop a friendship before the creepiness comes out. No, I'm kidding. Hey, play the IDs. We have because if anything else, we also lead, as Kobe said, we lead the league in show IDs, and we got two new ones now.
Hey, this is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
Like that.
Now I want to explain the next one, because when I asked her to do the ID, it took her four or five tries before she got the one that you just heard. Well, Robert was kind of making fun of her when she handed the phone back to him. Apparently, she called him Mr. One Take, and so he had to show how simple it was to do something like this.
This is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
he turns into Mae West all of a sudden. I love this show. You can't get show IDs like that anywhere else,
no,
folks.
No, you cannot.
That's right.
So we're going to shift gears. Ben Ayers, how are you?
I'm great now.
Really?
Yeah.
So, well, you have a show going on at The Fringe.
Yes, sir.
It's 7 o'clock tonight.
7:30.
7:30. Okay, you got a little bit of breathing time. So tell us about Creatures of the Night that you wrote.
Creatures of the Night's play I wrote. It is featuring Scott Greenwell and Robert Neal.
Oh, wait a minute. Do you have the code? Do you have it? Robert Neal. Remember, it should be on the screen.
Oh, crap. Where is it?
You know what? You look for it. We'll talk. Right. Go ahead.
Directed by Jim Tillett, who's a great director and a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. So this is a 45-minute show, one act about two men in the middle of the night in a shed, and they are trying to get a werewolf sighting. And
hilarity ensues.
It does, yes.
It's a werewolf version of Godot.
Yeah. Well, you might have to check it out, because there is reference to a favorite movie of mine, and I'm sure yours, Wolfen.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure you have that on Laserdisc somewhere.
I think you have to watch that with Looker so you can get the Albert Finney sci-fi experience.
Right, that's right.
Wow. Wolfen. That's Albert Finney and Gregory Hines, and it's a wolf running around New York.
Yeah.
Was it after American Werewolf?
It might have been around at the same time.
Check Wolfen on IMDb, would you, Cobe?
On it.
Yeah, when you're not Googling old vintage chicks.
I got Robert Neal here. You want him?
Yeah, we had this for him. There's only a handful of guests that have their own intro, and Robert has his. Here's
right,
here.
Let's hear it.
How'd it go? It was interesting.
You see Harris?
Yes. He didn't have the tape.
You've had a call from MI5.
The spook department. Who?
Sir Robert Neal. Wants to meet you for lunch tomorrow. sending his car at 12. Time for a drink?
No, I've had enough. You two okay?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Kerrigan.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. Mind how you go?
See you in the morning.
We gotta edit that.
Robert Neal never meets me for lunch.
That's from the Ken Loach film Hidden Agenda with Frances McDormand and the voice you should know, Brian Cox. So, what inspired you to do this story?
Well, we're in a special time here. I don't know that there's ever been a better time for nerds, and I speak from experience because there are so many shows now about vampires and werewolves and movies about. Supernatural creatures and everything. It's wonderful, and I grew up on that stuff. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, you watch the shows and you watch the movies and then you move on with the rest of your life, but you wonder what it's like for people who take it very, very seriously.
Right.
And kind of need for these creatures to exist.
I would call them basement dwellers, but I see that you're adding a little more dimension and character to the stereotype.
Well, that's what I would like to think.
Okay, all right.
I think this show will be a lot of fun, but like other stories, it's about a relationship. So these two men just trying to figure out what it is they're doing and how they relate to each other.
When did you start writing it?
Actually, around last Halloween, I knew I wanted to write something for the Fringe. I was aiming for something. That was simple enough and short enough to be able to move in and out of a festival setting. And, I was inspired by a lot of the things I was seeing on AMC around Halloween time and thought, well, this might be something that works.
Now, growing up, was werewolf your monster of choice? Or did you have a creature?
I think just whatever was in the movie Willow. I don't think you could have convinced me that wasn't the best movie in the world.
Wow. Well, you had strong taste back then.
That's right.
It's funny. There's on MeTV. Do we have the Svengoolie ID there? No. I'm hitting you. I thought you had the whole.
You're coming at him.
I do come at them. So, but there's a show called Svengoolie on MeTV, which I don't know what the cable channel is here in India, but I know it's 13.3 THR. But we've had the host on once before, Rich Coase, but he does the old Universal catalog. So you can get anything from, they're showing the original Mummy, I know, tomorrow night, but they've been showing all the sequels. So, there should be enough footage of Lon Chaney roaming around the golf course at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Very good.
So, all right. So, when are the shows? When are your shows happening?
So, opens tonight, 7:30 show. Saturday, tomorrow at 9 p.m. There's one on Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Middle of the week show on Wednesday. That one's at 7:30 p.m. And then next weekend, Saturday show at 7:30 p.m. And a Sunday show to finish it out at 6 p.m. So, six chances to see it. And I hope we get a lot of people in. I think they'll have a lot of fun and hopefully get something out of it, too.
Hopefully. Well, this is a busy weekend between Fringe, Gen Con, and the
last weekend for the fair.
And the last weekend for the White Expo. And is it motorcycle?
Yep, MotoGP's here.
Wow, see?
There is so much going on.
There is so much. And film sociology. And, of course, tomorrow night I'll be providing the soundtrack for everybody. As you're going about to Gen Con or Fringe or whatever, State Fair.
Or if you're chilling.
If you're chilling with Ellen.
If you are getting stoked for classes at...
school starts up for a bunch of people on Monday.
Yes, it does.
Kids Film Correspondent starts up on Monday.
Yep.
We have our annual end of the summer tradition at the Soucy household, the Cliff Richard Musical Summer Holiday.
Oh, just one last treat before school begins?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, actually. So I thank Richard Miles here at WFYI for introducing the films of Cliff Richard to my daughter and me, for that matter. But it's become our end of the summer tradition. It's not Barn Rat, not the end of Barn Rats, not Penrod. No, it's when we watch Summer Holiday that we know summer is officially over. You all right over there?
Yeah, I got this.
Well, hello there. I'm Svengoolie from MeTV, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. If there's an Indian Annapolis, it means that he's a military-type person from Native America.
Thank you, Sven.
Thanks, Sven. One other show at Indie Fringe I need to plug. If you go to indiefringe.org for tickets and information and where everything's at, The Last Nickel, which is directed by Morgan Ozenbog, who was one of my sound effect ladies in It's a Wonderful Life. That is running Friday, tonight at 10:30, Saturday at 4:30, Sunday at 1:30, Tuesday at 6, Wednesday at 9, and next Sunday, the 26th, at 1:30. Also, tomorrow night, or tomorrow afternoon, I should say, there's an exhibit at the Eiljorg called Out West, LGBT Hidden Histories. The exhibit starts at 1:30 with a tour, and at 3:30 they're showing Brokeback Mountain. So, a film that's still better than Crash, but it couldn't win Best Picture. Thanks, Ernest Borgnine. So, well, he's
I got Wolfen here. What do you
he's
want?
He's not the only one. You have Wolfen?
No, I've got it. I've got it pulled up here.
You should watch it.
Oh, that's all you. That's the only place you were going with that.
Yeah, I'm afraid okay. So. No, who else is in it? There's Gregory Hines. There's Albert Finney.
Albert Finney, Diane Venora.
Oh, Diane Venora.
Edward James Olmos.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Young
Tom
Edward James
Noonan,
Olmos.
Dick O'Neill.
Good cast.
Peter Michael Getz.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, so quickly, we're going to go to the video store. We don't need the intro. Apparently, the most important movie of the year until the Avengers and Dark Knight Rises showed up, that was The Hunger Games.
Yep.
No, I liked Hunger Games. I haven't read it. Have you read it? You read it.
Yep.
You and Fair Sweet Bianca read to each other, right?
Yes, that's exactly what happens.
You do? Mm-hmm. You make mojitos and read the book.
Hell yeah.
So that is coming out tomorrow. Enjoy Jennifer Lawrence in that. It was a film that was good enough that I didn't say, you know, you should really watch Running Man, Lord of the Flies, and Rollerball first, because those were the, you know, I didn't do that. The film is that good. So that's out, as well as the trauma film Father's Day, because you don't get enough trauma information. And The Raid Redemption. Now, also some old titles on Blu-ray. Here's the question. I bring this up. So, Ben, do you own a Blu-ray?
No.
That's okay. You can still participate. So this is the question: is if you
we
if
try
you're not
play
out of this
we
game.
Try playing DVDs on our record player, but
not good.
Have to figure it out.
Tyler Bobblehead did that too. So
That was a rough day for him.
If you owned a Blu-ray player, would you want to buy the big title coming out this week, Jaws?
Like a remastered?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. First film that scared the crap out of me as a kid. You've never seen it, have you?
I've seen Jaws.
But I don't want to see it again. on Criterion, The Royal Tenenbaums, for you fans of Wes Anderson. And then there's occasionally, it just goes to show you, they'll put anything out on Blu-ray. Fallen, Denzel Washington.
Sure, yeah.
New Jack City.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for you Jet Li fans, because The Expendables opened this week, Romeo Must Die and Cradle to the Grave.
They're both on one?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But there is a Stallone set if you need First Blood, Copland, and Lock Up.
If you need it,
those
there.
Three. Nothing else, just those three. A Man Apart for Vin Diesel fans. Death Wish 2, 3, and 4, separate.
Uh-huh.
Three, I just watched recently. That is bat spit crazy. It is. It's a loony film. I highly recommend it. And the original, I have to buy it. I will find it. The 1971 masterpiece, Shaft. Thank you, Richard Roundtree. So, all right, we'll have to do Dead People We Like next week because we don't have time for Dead People We Like and Don't Like. Here's some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people.
Zardoz has spoken.
Ben, thanks for hanging out with us. This is what we do.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And break a leg, give my best to the guys.
Thank you so much.
And come back anytime.
All right.
On behalf of Kobe and Ben and Fringe and Gen Con and the motorcycle racers and Robert and Gail especially, go see a good movie. You deserve it. And Tyler, work on your reading.
Me and Tyler are about to go get a Luther at the State Fair.
Oh, gosh. I've never had a Luther, and I'm built like one.
Full report next week right here, Film Sociology.
That's right. Your film and culinary news here. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to WFYI HD2 The Point. Film Sociology is there, as well as WFYI.org. We gone.